Thanks, Ivy. It's good to see you all. I'm Steve, as Ivy mentioned. It's great to be with you. The last two Sundays, I was not around. I was with my son, John, and a team of seven other folks from Reservoir in India. And my memory of that trip is something like third part jet lag, third part sitting in traffic or on planes, and the last third, like, eating. But I was really exhausting, but it was also a really beautiful time, too. Our team from Reservoir was visiting our friends and our partners in ASHA, folks who work for community development and community transformation in the slums of the great city of Delhi. And I'm so grateful for you all's support in sending me and sending our team there, helping this trip happen. We go to ASHA each year as partners and as learners primarily, but I was also really, really proud of all that the Reservoir community could give to this partnership this year as well. We brought an audiologist from this community, Daniel Hendricks, who was hearing testing lots of people throughout the week and fitting a number of people with their first ever hearing aids so they could hear or speak for the first time. We brought a psychiatrist, Dr. John Petit, and a social worker, Amanda Proctor, to meet with people throughout the week and help advise ASHA in building out their community mental health resources. We brought a physical therapist, Dr. Jean Petit, to develop this train-the-trainer model of pushing women's health exercises into these communities. There are so many doctors on our team. We brought Drs. Lucas and Justina Oliveira, who brought soccer balls and music and wise mentoring to the youth and college students of these communities, and Kate Nelson with her joy and presence and hand motions, like leading children's groups with my son John and the rest of the team as well. And I just thought all week, like, you, Reservoir, are a really, really talented congregation. And it was fun to see, like, a subset of many different types of those talents being shared with the world's urban poor in a really neat partnership. So when I wasn't kind of sleepy or sick, I was just, like, beaming with pride all week. And certainly our team, but our team is a representation of this congregation. As I mentioned, though, we partner with ASHA not so much for what we have to give them, but for all that they have to teach us as a church. One memory that captures that for me is a home visit that some of us had in one of their slums they work in called Mayapuri. And Mayapuri is sandwiched between India's largest scrap metal junkyard and this really busy set of freight train tracks. So it's a dirty and crowded and dangerous and really hard place to live. But ASHA is present in that neighborhood, not with, like, pity or handouts, but with empowerment. And so we had just met a woman who had run two small businesses from her home, where she sat on this mat. And she sat on this mat because she had lost both of her legs in an accident along the train tracks there, as a number of other people in that community had. But with loans she had earned through ASHA's financial inclusion program, she had set up a tea shop and also a clothes mending business, both of which were making her money now. And she had fully paid off her loan and was, you know, earning stuff for her family's future. And then right after meeting her, a number of us visited the home of this 30-year-old mother named Larji. And she lived with her family in one room tucked against the railway tracks. And she told us that with the noise and with the lack of bathroom or sanitation or cooking and with all the water that got into that room all the time, that it was a really, really hard place to raise a family. We could see that. But as we spent time with her, her courage and her will to survive really inspired us. One of our team members, who's a fellow mom, asked if we could pray for her, and she was really glad for that and welcomed that. Another bent down and touched her feet, which is like a sign of respect and honor in Indian culture, and told her that we were so moved by her courage, and she was really shocked by that, but she smiled. And I thought in moments like that, again and again and again throughout the week, that this is why we're here, that we are here to see the face of God, to see the presence of Jesus in Larji, this empowered mom with the will to survive in impossibly difficult circumstances. To see the face of God in my young friend named Suman, who's this joyful young woman who's working to become a social worker and join in the uplift in her community in which she was raised. To see the face of God in Sonab, who is this student who, despite all the ways that she's been diminished, has hope and determination for what her life will become. I met a young man named Shiv, this leader who takes pride in organizing the same neighborhood that he was raised in as a child. I was reminded throughout the week that I bring teams from Reservoir to be with Asha in Delhi slums because it's hard and disruptive to be there. It profoundly breaks my rhythms of life. Most of us got sick at some point. This experience, though, helps me stop and notice some things about myself and where I'm going. And I go, too, because I see God in fresh ways there, and I'm reminded of the spiritually rich and relationally rich and less lonely and more purposeful life that I'm made to live. The old word for these kind of experiences, for this journey we can take to recenter our lives and meet with God, is called pilgrimage. Pilgrimage is a journey of any kind we take to a place that we in some way consider sacred, a place where we hope for whatever reason that we might find God. Pilgrimage is a break from our regular rhythms of our ordinary life to discover what's missing or what's kind of off or disordered in our lives as we're living them now. Pilgrimage is usually something that we do with other people, not usually something that we do alone. And it's a walk that we take that we hope will help us find something that we need to know, to find something spiritual, something internal that we need to have, to center ourselves in more hope and more truth than we had before we started. And pilgrimage, I think, is a pretty good metaphor for this six-week season that I'm going to invite our community into today. So this topic of pilgrimage is our topic for today. So let me pray for us, and then we'll continue to unpack this. Join me for a moment. God, as we gather today and we make space for a little time with my words, I pray that there be space for whatever you have to say to us, God. God, I pray that you'd open us today to start to see and notice any ways that we are perishing. I pray, God, that you'd fill us with hope, that we can find a way to seek more and more life. I pray, God, that you'd invite us each in our own way onto pilgrimage today, into a journey over these weeks to come where we'll confront life as we're living it now and we'll be stirred to greater hope, greater beauty, greater healing, truth, and love. I pray that it be so, God. Amen. So pilgrimage is a really important part of most ancient faith traditions. In our Jesus-centered faith tradition, really also in the Christian and Muslim and Jewish faith traditions too, it goes back as far as the great father of faith, Abraham. And so I'm going to read for us this first century midrash, this creative reflection on Abraham's long pilgrimage. It's from a New Testament letter called Hebrews. It's in your program as well, and it goes like this. It says, by faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was going to receive as an inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived in the land he had been promised as a stranger. He lived in tents along with Isaac and Jacob, who were co-heirs of the same promise. He was looking forward to a city that has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, even Sarah received the ability to have a child, though she herself was barren and past the age for having children, because she believed that the one who promised was faithful. So descendants were born from one man, and he was as good as dead. They were as many as the number of the stars in the sky and as countless as the grains of the sand on the seashore. All these people died in faith without receiving the promises, but they saw the promises from a distance and welcomed them. They confessed that they were strangers and immigrants on earth. People who say this kind of thing make it clear that they are looking for a homeland. If they had been thinking about the country they had left, they would have had the opportunity to return to it. But at this point in time, they were longing for a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God isn't ashamed to be called their God. He has prepared a city for them. So Abraham, we read, had a hometown. He had a family and friends. He had a religion and a community in which he was raised. Presumably, he had apprenticed into some kind of way to make a living. He and his family had a home that he could live in, that he would inherit from his parents when they passed away. But he sensed that there was something more for him in life, that the life he'd settled into as he'd grown up wasn't complete, at least for him. Best as he could tell, God had something different for him. So he took this long walk. He emigrated from his homeland, and he lived as a stranger, as an immigrant in someone else's land, looking for God there, looking, Hebrews tells us, for the life that God was building for him there. And Sarah traveled with Abraham. They were married, so they were going to be in this together. But Hebrews says Sarah was also on an inner pilgrimage. She was sure that God meant for her to have children. That was part of the great hope that Abraham and Sarah each had for what God was building. But year after year went by and no children came, so Sarah had to dig deep and hope for more. And their child, Isaac, and their grandchild, Jacob, took up this life of pilgrimage too. They lived in tents rather than houses because a mediocre life of less than their full destiny wasn't good for them. They knew that God had more. These famous patriarchs and matriarch of faith are the father and mother of all of us, really, who dare hope for what we're sure that God would want for us, even when it isn't clear how that's going to happen. They're the father and mother of all of us who feel like we're not done, that we need to keep moving in some way, even though we don't quite always know where we're going. Hebrews says that in the long run, when what we get when we hope for this full life in God is we get a home. We get security and fulfillment in this life or the next. And in the present, we can know that God is proud of us. And we can have these whole hearts that know, like, there's still more for us. We haven't just settled quite yet. But in the present, when we kind of look for more, when we want to go someplace with God, we also get disruption. People who are looking for more from God than we have right now have to break the rhythm of our lives as they are and live like strangers. This second word in Hebrews is translated immigrants, is often translated as pilgrims. Now, some of you have literally become strangers and immigrants in your lives. Like you or your parents wanted something different than your town and life of origin provided, and so you left your home. You left your country to be where you are today. I'm thinking those of you in this congregation who are like pilgrims in the sense you are actual immigrants to this country, you have at least my like great admiration and respect for that journey. Because that kind of lifelong pilgrimage might lead to something better for you or for the generations to follow you. But I know it also means living a life of not fully being at home, either where you've come from or where you've gone sometimes. And it's hard to feel like a stranger. So any like immigrants in our midst today, I think, wow, God bless your bold journey. I think, wow, may you and your children find a deep sense of home among us. May your journey be blessed. Others of you are different kind of pilgrims. You're not immigrants, but you resonate right away with this text. Some of us have for a long time been looking for something in life that we don't have, but we think it's our lot to keep hoping or to keep trying. And so if that's you, I think, wow, God bless your hopes in that as well today. But even if this isn't for you, I think even for all of us, times and seasons of pilgrimage are core to a life of faith. Pilgrimage is a journey. It can be an exterior journey, like a place we go, or an interior journey to a destination that we either know or that we don't know yet. It can be a literal trip where we travel somewhere and we hope that in the traveling or in the arriving, we'll learn something new or in some way meet God. A pilgrimage, whether it's exterior or interior, is a break with our settled, regular life. It's delaying gratification. It's choosing to give up some short-term good we have for a longer-term but not fully known great that we hope to experience or hope to find. There's a scholar whose work I follow who recently described an experience of pilgrimage that she had that I want to tell you about. Now, her name is Christina Cleveland. She's visited this church a couple times in the past, has some connections to this community. And she wrote recently about a time after publishing her first book when she'd been on tour. And her life as an author and as a speaker and as a resource for churches had exposed her to so much racism, to so much misogyny, so much this kind of rejection of her as a person, that it had just worn her out. She was exhausted, and she was coping as best she could, which she said was not very well. And then she was asked to fill in as the lead professor on this study tour to Brazil. And she's there for a month, living in the beauty of Northeast Brazil, on the seaside. She was immersed in this state in Brazil, which is marked by its Afro-Brazilian culture. And she realized while she was there that she was unintentionally on a pilgrimage. She had the freedom, like outside her regular rhythm, to notice just how much her life wasn't what God had meant for her, and had the chance to start stepping into some more hope and some more healing that had been eluding her until then. And here's one of the things she had to say about experience like this. She writes, "Pilgrimage is about longing, consciousness, and intentionality. Pilgrimage is about noticing where we have been and where we have been broken, beaten, and bruised. Pilgrimage is about acknowledging that part of us is perishing and that we're seeking new life. Pilgrimage is about looking for hope, healing, beauty, and truth." These three words there, longing, consciousness, and intentionality. She breaks down further as these three things: noticing where we are perishing, seeking new life, and specifically looking for hope, healing, beauty, and truth. In my trips to be with the people of Asha, I find, as I did this month, far from home, that I notice some ways that my life at home in Boston is broken. I notice some ways I'm too busy to live wholeheartedly, ways that my over-scheduled, over-driven life has cut me off from others, sometimes even cut me off from my own thoughts and heart. Sometimes when I do notice the state of my heart then, I don't like all that I find that has been growing there. But immersed in Asha's neighborhoods there, where people are living out hope and joy, generosity, simplicity, and empowerment in really stunning ways, I find myself too with more hope and more vision for what my life back home can look like. I think travel often does this. Travel can often be the center of a pilgrimage. When I was preparing to travel for the first time to India a couple years back, a friend of mine gave me advice that surprised me. Because I was preparing for kind of what I would learn in India or what I would learn in the slum communities we would work in, how God might teach me through that environment. And my friend really encouraged me to pay attention to what I'd learn about myself, what I'd notice in my family who I was traveling with. I hadn't expected that, because I thought, I can pay attention to myself or my family, like right at home. I don't need anything else to do that. But he knew that travel and change often provide an opportunity for longing and consciousness and intentionality, for noticing something new about our lives, for specifically noticing any ways we're perishing, and for seeking and starting to find new life. Physical journeys like this can be really special times. They cost us something, and I think the cost and the novelty help focus us. They also break our rhythm, and they help us pay attention. So a physical journey, a literal journey, can help us attend in really profound ways to our inner lives. So these travel pilgrimages have their place. And if you feel led to like launch a journey at some point today, that'd be a wonderful thing. Abraham, after all, traveled across the ancient Near East. There's literature of pilgrimage in the Psalms and the Bible from this ancient Jewish tradition of going up to Jerusalem for the high holidays. It's like the Hajj to Mecca for Muslims, or Christians that go on the Camino in Spain or other so-called holy sites. But travel pilgrimage can cost a lot. It's not in reach for all of us all the time in terms of time or budget. And we can't all just drop what we're doing and like fly to Jerusalem or Spain or Brazil or India or whatever it is you might hope to find new perspective and new life. So thankfully, our church tradition has supplied this annual opportunity for a type of pilgrimage that actually doesn't involve going anywhere at all. And it's a season we're about to begin, which is called Lent. And Lent is related to this old spring word for spring, because this season starts, takes place sort of in that bridge from winter to spring in the northern hemisphere. It's the 40 days before Easter, where churches have traditionally invited people into a form of pilgrimage. It's a time to break our ordinary rhythms of life, It's a time for a different level of longing and consciousness and intentionality. Lent is a time to notice any ways that we are perishing. It's a time to seek new life. It's a time specifically to look for hope, healing, beauty, and truth. There's a really great Jewish mystic from the 20th century named Abraham Heschel, who called actually all of faith, certainly not Lent or certainly not even just pilgrimage, but he called all of faith not the clinging to a shrine, but an endless pilgrimage of the heart. I love that line of his, that faith is an endless pilgrimage of the heart. That faith involves noticing where our hearts are lonely or empty or broken. Faith involves noticing where our lives are stunted or off course. And faith is then this conscious longing, this conscious directing of our hearts and our lives toward hope, healing, beauty, truth, and love. I obviously don't know how your heart is lonely or empty or broken. I've heard from some of you this week that this past week's news of one of the world's larger Christian denominations rejecting the full inclusion of LGBTQ people, that was heartbreaking for many of us. That's one thing I've heard from you this week. At the same time, we've all been hearing the world's largest Christian denomination and our country's second largest Christian denomination are both embroiled in very public sexual assault and abuse scandals and don't show any sign of really addressing those adequately. And so perhaps for some of you, I know for a number of you, churches have broken your heart. And if that's so, as one of the pastors of Reservoir Church, it is like a tremendous honor and joy to me that you are still here today, if that's so. I really pray that this community holds your trust well and honors you with dignity at every turn. That is certainly our intention and always will be. I know, though, that for many of us, all manner of other stories are around of how our hearts are lonely or broken or empty, how our lives are in some way kind of stunted or off the course that we want for them. They may be mild things, like things that call for like a kind of course correction. They may be quite serious things, too. There's like a wide range, I know. But God's with us in this, we find. The divine, Abraham Heschel says again, rings our hearts like a bell and is waiting to enter our empty, perishing lives. The God at the focus of Sarah and Abraham's faith we read about is building this better city, it says, wanting to stir hope and vision in us for this place that we can walk together. So this Lent, our intention as a community is to pay attention to these things, to try to take this walk forward together. We've called this season of Lent other things at times past because we've made this at times into a season to ask God for big things for our church or to ask God for big things we want in our lives. And there are certainly times and places for doing that, and we'll do that again in other seasons. But this year, our pastoral team really felt led to celebrate Lent in the ways our tradition has given us. Because while churches have screwed up all manner of other things, this season of Lent, we think, is a gem. We think this is a keeper. And typically, three things have been part of this old, old Lenten tradition that I want to tell you about. One is this has been a season of fasting. Now, this is maybe the one thing people know about Lent if they've never heard anything else, because they've maybe heard about people that give up something for Lent, people that don't eat meat or skip a meal on Fridays, people who don't eat sweets or drink alcohol, people who stop watching Netflix or kind of whatever it is they feel like they want to give up for a season. That hit a chord. That was weird. I didn't expect that. Okay. The point of this, giving up that people do is just to break our rhythm in some really specific outer way to try to break our internal rhythm as well. This is the noticing we are perishing part of Lent. Again, you can stop eating food in different forms here and there, or you can fast from social media or entertainment, or you can try some, I think in my mind, kind of impossible to do, but some people aspire to, like internal fast, like to fast from complaint or criticism every day for weeks on end. But I encourage you to consider like something really tangible, something that might open up some time in your life. Because in giving up a short-term known good, The goal, as in pilgrimage, is to make space for a longer-term great. It's been kind of elusive for us to try to notice the state of our heart and our life and to notice any way that we're perishing, any way that we're longing for more. So I invite you to consider some form of fasting for this Lent. We'll have a soft start to Lent this Wednesday at an Ash Wednesday service. The information is in your events and happening sheet. That's the day that Lent most traditionally begins. But we'll begin and we'll start in earnest as a community this coming Sunday. And I'll pitch this notion of fasting if it interests you once more then. The second thing, though, that's typically part of Lent is that it's a season to stretch our generosity. This is much less famous, the form of fasting, but it's another form of giving something up, of becoming less attached to our stuff and more attached to God, of trying to become actually less anxious and more free. So Lent in our tradition has always been a time, too, of simplifying and of letting go. So remember that we aren't defined by our things or our money or our experiences we can accumulate, just as we aren't defined by our anxieties or by our debts that we might have. Early in Abraham's pilgrimage that he takes, at the very time when he has this opportunity to get like obscenely wealthy and to stop looking for more, he has this weird encounter with a mysterious priest named Melchizedek that he meets in the desert. And he pledges to Melchizedek a tenth of all his possessions. It's the first reference in the Bible to this really old practice called tithing, where people give a tenth of their income or possessions to God's work in the world. Melchizedek is this weird figure. He's like this mysterious, kind of mythic figure that drops out of nowhere in these accounts and then disappears again. And so he's been a really cool and intriguing character for imaginative artists over the year and for mythic literature. And so this priest Melchizedek shows up in an important way in this modern novel called The Alchemist that I used to love to teach when I was an English teacher. He's kind of an important character in that story. And the Jesus tradition, too, sees Melchizedek as this forerunner of Jesus as well, as this human being who can connect heaven to earth, who can link our lives with the life of God for us. All to say, Abraham encounters this mysterious figure in this story and realizes in another way that pilgrimage always takes a cost, that pilgrimage always involves a letting go. And so Lent has invited people over centuries to choose into more generosity and choose to give to Jesus in some way. So by all means, do this if you want to, however you like. There are amazingly infinite ways to be generous, so that's great. While Reservoir is not Jesus by any means, though, we're very clear about that, we will next week launch like a very small giving campaign to encourage new regular givers to this ministry if that isn't your practice yet. Again, choose another form of generosity if you like. We'll soft touch that here. But next Sunday, as we start Lent, we'll share a small way that you can participate in this community's work in a new way, if that, you'd like that to be tied to your practice of generosity in this season. Fasting and generosity, though, are both, they're both about letting go. And the third hallmark of Lent is about seeking to find more, seeking to find more of the divine, more hope, healing, beauty, truth, and love. And so Lent, apart from or on top of fasting and generosity, is also a season for spiritual formation through intentional, structured, Jesus-centered spiritual practice. Our primary vehicle for that as a community is this themed community exploration that involves a 6-week Bible guide you can use on your own or in community groups here and our Sunday services that connect to that. I'll share a lot more about this next Sunday. But I'm really excited about this year's stuff we'll be doing, this year's kind of pilgrimage material. We've called it The Wild Places, and we'll be looking at themes of wilderness and exile in the Bible, times when people notice that life is out of control or they're confronted with some way in which they are perishing, but also times where this becomes really fruitful grounds for learning and for discovery and for encounter, and for the launching of an impossibly hopeful next chapter in their lives or their community's life as well. So we'll have a guide for you each week starting next Sunday that you can use. We'll have some neat stuff on Sundays too, a Sunday themed around doubt and the opportunities we have in our doubts. A really powerful guest speaker new to our community from BU School of Theology another week. Our own Ivy Anthony will lead another participatory liturgy, these kind of experiential services we've piloted at Christmas time over the years. And there'll be a lot more of other stuff as well. All to say, though, our season of Lent, again, gets warmed up midweek this week on Ash Wednesday. If you'd be interested in that service, or if you're in a community group, they'd be interested. But we'll also then start in earnest next Sunday. If you call this church your home, there'll be one of our quarterly member meetings tonight, this potluck we have every quarter for members from 5 to 7. And there, apart from a usual update from our board, our family's pastor, Kim Messenger, will also lead us in this interactive meditation on the life of Jesus using some of the materials that we use with our children here at Reservoir as well. So that'll be another way to prepare for this season. Our real hope for Lent, though, isn't, of course, about like any of these specific program elements at Reservoir. This is just our attempt to make this season tangible and accessible together as a community. The real hope is for a fruitful season of inner pilgrimage for us all, of fasting and generosity that breaks our rhythms, that makes space to help us see any ways that we're perishing. And the hope is a season of pilgrimage too, where we can consciously and intentionally seek more life in the midst of that, and we can discover more beauty, hope, life, truth, and love. And so that's the invitation I want to wrap up on for today. I'm going to breeze over the slides and the program notes. I'm not sure I put the words just right for this week. But our invitation each day this week is in these two parts, which is one, to notice any ways that our lives are not working. To notice any ways, as I've put it today, that we are perishing. And actually not to try to fix that or do anything about it, but just to notice it with curiosity. To say, that is not working in my life. And secondly, to say to God that this Lent, we'd like to seek life. We'd like to say yes to this invitation to pilgrimage. That with the help of this community, with the help of God, we're interested in more hope, healing, beauty, truth, and love.